I listen to my body. I go keep it as comfortable as I can on those easy days and just try to get through them because I'm usually pretty tired from the days prior. And I know that going easy and not, you know, pushing myself when I don't feel like I should be pushed means that I'll save it and get more out of the hard days to follow.
That was ITU pro triathlete Taylor Spivey, and this is her story on the Pacing Racing Podcast. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in today. My name is Stephen Langenhausen. I am the host of the Pace Racing Podcast. And joining us today is USA pro triathlete Taylor Spivey, who recently ranked fourth in the World Triathlon Series and third in the Super League Triathlon Series. So Taylor has been on fire the last few years with dominating performances across the ITU and the Super League. And she's here to talk with us about those race series, as well as the highly anticipated upcoming Tokyo 2020 Olympics. I'm really pumped to be speaking with Taylor today because she's a huge global icon in the triathlon circuit. She has such an upbeat personality and always puts on a great race performance when it counts. She's a very smart mindset when it comes to balancing the demands of training and racing, which you'll hear about in this episode. And it's super cool to hear about her perspectives on the Super League and the ITU series. Now, Taylor's boyfriend is former podcast guest and world champion Vincent Louis. So between both of their schedules, I think it's safe to say these two live the full-time professional triathlon experience 24/7, 365 days a year. And as you hear, they do tons of traveling because of it, and they basically live out of a suitcase. And it's an awesome story to hear. So also, as always, I like to finish strong with asking some key age group training tips. And Taylor definitely delivered on this. So get ready for another great episode, guys. And let's get into it. The sponsor of today's podcast is brought to you by Quintana Roo Triathlon Bikes. I'm absolutely ecstatic and humbled to be working alongside Quintana Roo as they have the best lineup of triathlon bikes and products out there on the market. And to be riding a Quintana Roo bike is honestly a dream come true. Now, Quintana Roo actually started making triathlon bikes all the way back in 1989 and have since created the nicest looking designs and the most top performing features I've seen. And after a ton of research, I went with the PR5, seeing as I'll be doing my first full distance triathlon at Challenge Roth this summer. So I want to make sure I was equipped with the best bike and the best gear. And I can't wait to show this bike off. So currently right now, I'm working alongside JP at Brown Sports on a bike fit video, which is going to be awesome because for those who don't know about that shop, they sell and do bike fits on QR bikes all the time. So you can stay tuned for that by simply subscribing to the Pace Racing YouTube channel. And another reason I went with Quintana Roo bikes were that when you ride with QR, you essentially become family. Now at any Ironman or USA Triathlon event that QR is attending, you can bring your QR bike to the booth and they'll do a free checkup and tune up, which is super, super cool because it takes the worry out of your racing and traveling. The bike also comes with lifetime warranties. So when you look at the 2019 Kona bike list, you can see why they had over 120 Quintana Roo bikes there. They're absolutely a great brand to ride with, and the bikes are well suited for challenging courses like Kona. And another neat fact, when you order from Quintana Roo, all the bikes are pulled, painted, and built for each customer order that comes through the door, so much so that they fall within the NAFTA guidelines, and Canadian customers don't actually get hit with any duty on any QR products when they're shipped to Canada. So I think that's pretty neat if you're living here in Canada. I mean, as you can hear, of course, I'm a big fan of not only their bikes, but also their brand and service in general. So stay tuned because you'll be seeing lots of the PR5 across social media. So be sure to be subscribed to all platforms. And again, if you want to learn more about Quintana Roo, then of course, you can simply find them by searching them on Facebook or Instagram by searching Quintana Roo, or head to www.quintanarootri.com. And again, Quintana Roo is spelt Quintanarroo. The second sponsor of today's show is 51 Speed Shop, and this is a company that is making huge headway in the triathlon industry. The key difference between 51 Speed Shop and their competitors is that they don't just take the fit-first approach in their development. They are the fitters and are actually very well known for being some of the best fitters out there. And I truly think their products they design could be some of the best products out there when it comes to a blend of aerodynamics, comfort, and performance. So between 80 to 90% of the overall resistance affecting the rider comes from aerodynamic drag. Therefore, if we can reduce the drag, the rider can maintain a higher velocity for the same given efforts. And when we buy a triathlon bike, we're actually buying speed. Now, the tri-bike allows a rider to hold a position on the bike and attempt to decrease aerodynamic drag. However, that number one thing that impacts a rider's ability to increase their speed is not aerodynamics. In fact, it's comfort. Now, comfort is measured as our ability to sustain your position for the duration of your race. And if you're unable to hold your position because you're uncomfortable, then nothing else really matters. And that's why 51 Speed Shop has created a variety of aero bar extensions to meet the demands of all types of riders. For example, if you like your wrist in neutral positions with higher hand height when holding the bars, then you can look at the Ski Carbon Extensions, which is used by riders like Jake Birtwistle, Sam Appleton, and Jake Montgomery. Now, if you like neutral wrist with moderate hand height, then you can go with the FSM extensions like Heather Jackson or Tim Reed. Now, you also have the option of the Ultimate Carbon Extensions that offer high hand position while offering multiple rotational configurations, or you can even pair any of these extensions with the 51 Monorizer aero bar system for maximal aerodynamics and comfort. I'm personally a big fan of this brand and their extensions. I'll definitely be throwing a pair on my PR5. Now, which ones? You'll have to stay tuned to find out which ones we'll be putting on through our Bike Fit video. Now, to find out more about 51 Speed Shop, you can actually check them out on Instagram or Facebook by searching 51 Speed Shop, or you can simply check out all their products by going to their website at 51-speedshop.com. All right, Taylor, what's up? How are things?
Things are great. I'm just settling into my first training camp of the season, and I'm happy to be finding some sort of fitness.
That's it. So, I mean, first off, thanks so much for coming on the show here. I know you're quite busy, so I appreciate you setting some time to make this happen. I know you just got back from a long workout session there. And now, I mean, first off, before we get into everything, how has things been on your end lately? Like, just talking about that long workout session there, it looks like you've been put through quite a suffer fest with some hill reps and tempo runs on Instagram there.
Yeah. I think we've just started to do some hard sessions, and my legs are definitely feeling it after, like, as we head into our third week. But we do a lot of hill repeats, whether it's on the bike or the run, and I think later on in the year it'll pay off and we'll be stronger because of it.
That's it. Exactly. All right. And that's motivation for everyone listening, myself included too, right? I know it's hard to get back into it in January, you know, but the seasons will be here before we know it. So it's good to get at it. So
yeah, it's always a roller coaster getting back into training and finding that fitness. But it slowly comes around. I think hopefully by the end of this month, we'll start to feel some glimpses of fitness.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully so. I'm in the same boat. Oh, that's good. So there's lots to talk about here. And I mean, before we get into it, let's catch the listeners up to pace on your background a little bit. When did you get into triathlon and what made you ultimately get into the sport to begin with?
Yeah, I came into triathlon pretty late, I'd say, compared to a lot of people that I'm racing against. I grew up swimming and doing surf lifesaving. I grew up in this program in my hometown that's along, you know, most coasts in the U.S. and in a few other countries, called Junior Lifeguards. And there was a bit of like buoy swimming and running and just some fun competition involved in that. And I think that's kind of where my background in athleticism comes from. And eventually it translated into the sport I'm doing now, but it wasn't until my fourth year at university when I ended up studying abroad in Florence, Italy. I wanted to stay active, and so I took a year off and redshirted my collegiate swimming team and picked up biking and running along, you know, Tuscany. which is like a very unique experience. I had done a race just before I left, and while I was abroad, I was contacted by a coach named Greg Mueller, who saw my race results, and he did a good job of like taking me through some baby steps in, you know, getting me into the sport and not just throwing me into, you know, maybe a long course or something else that I wasn't ready for at that stage in my athletic career. And I then finished my last year in college and finished my last year of swimming and competed in collegiate nationals and came away with a national title, and the rest is history.
That's right, eh? The rest is, yeah, the amazing history. So, no, that's really cool, right? So I am surprised because, yeah, you mentioned you got into it later than a lot of other triathletes typically would. And I find with ITU, I feel like those ITU triathletes are just born doing triathlon. They're so quick at such a young age, right? But it's, no, it's amazing to see how you've kind of stemmed through all that. And when you talked about trying to decide if you're going the short course or long course, did you ever have thoughts of going long course, or is that still something maybe on your mind one day, or what's your thoughts around long course?
When I started, you know, just picking up running and biking, I didn't really know anything about IT racing at all. The only knowledge I had about the sport really was that my parents had did it before I was born, and that's how they met. And my mom was a former professional triathlete, and they both raced long distance. So I thought that was really the only thing there was out there. But luckily, I had the guidance of my first coach, Greg Mueller, and he introduced me to ITU. And after experiencing some of these races and just becoming like a diehard fan and watching them on Triathlon Live, I fell in love with the format, and I just found it to be so much fun. Yeah, I think maybe in the future I see myself doing a few 70.3s, but right now I'm sticking to ITU. The shorter stuff, it's like I said, it's a fun format, and the dynamics are constantly changing, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah, and it's a good group of people too you guys have in the ITU, right? Like, it seems like everyone's really close. You guys see each other race to race, and it's just a good camaraderie I see going on across the ITU circuit. And I think that's really cool. And, you know, it always seems like any ITU athlete that jumps up to the 70.3 course just seems to dominate. So, I mean, you guys obviously are doing something right in the ITU, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it translates well to, you know, 70.3. I think Ironman's a totally different beast, but yeah, I think it would be fun to do one day, and we train a lot anyways, so yeah, we'll see what happens in the future.
Perfect. No, amazing. So it's wild to see the path you've taken, and obviously you put the time and effort in, and it's clearly paid off. But let's chat about first the Olympics, because that's coming down the chute in about 6 months from now. And so how does this work with you and the American team? Because you guys have a really strong, notable lineup of triathletes. And I mean, if I'm correct, I might be mistaken here, but do they normally take three men, three women for the team, or how does that work?
So there is a point system in the IT racing made up of two different periods of time in racing. And each country with three people in the top 30 in that ranking get three athletes for their country. If you have more than 30, then that doesn't matter because it's capped at 30. But if you have less, or if you have more than three, then it's capped at three. But if you have less than three athletes in that top 30 ranking, you only get either one or two athletes, based on who's at that pointy end of this ranking. The interesting thing with the relay is that if you qualify your country in the relay, those countries get two men and two females, not just in the relay event, but also in the individual event. So that's something new that we'll be looking forward to in Tokyo 2020. But yeah, as for the U.S. women, we have, I don't know, something like five or I think it's six at least athletes in the top 30, which is pretty incredible to see. There's just so much depth in our women's program, and it's going to be so hard to make this team. One person is already qualified, and there are two spots left, and yeah, I'll do everything I can these next few months to get me to where I think I can be to qualify for this team.
Perfect. Yeah, it's so amazing to see how much of a buildup it is to make the team. And yeah, I guess, you know, being on Team USA, there's such a strong lineup of competition there, right? So it's definitely, it'd be definitely an honor to represent Team USA. So I think that's really cool. And like, do you know when they'll be able to confirm the team? Like, how does the qualifications work, and how will you, or, like, do you know when you'll?
Yeah, so one person already qualified at the test event. The way the criteria was written, I think, had a few blind spots, we'll call them. But I think a few of us, whether it was the girls that crashed in that race or myself who had a pretty bad stomach problem, we, you know, did not have the race we should have or could have or anything compared to any of the other races we had the entire year. So it was really, you know, heartbreaking for quite a few of us, because some people that, you know, should have made it just didn't. And it was just because of a bad day, bad luck or something like that. So, yeah, that was like a pretty tough phase of the year for me, but we will have another opportunity, which will be in Yokohama this next year, which is the middle, late end of May, I think. And so for the women, for the men, it's a bit different, but for the women, the first female U.S. athlete to get on the podium there will automatically qualify for the second spot. And the third spot will be discretionary. So it'll be up to a board of people that USA Triathlon has selected already, and they will choose who this third spot essentially goes to.
Wow. So it's an amazing process, right? And so I assume, I mean, of course, your thoughts are you want to make the team and represent Team USA at the Olympics this summer, but I assume now you have to include that in your training plan as if you were already on the team, right? Like, does your training change according to the Olympics, or is it just like any other season?
I think knowing whether or not you're on an Olympic team early on really helps you kind of relax in the early season, so you're not, you know, going or peaking too soon. But for, you know, the rest of us who haven't made the team yet, I think we still have something to prove, and we need to show that we are racing just as good as we raced last year, or even better, and that we still deserve this spot, because, like I said before, one spot is automatic and the other spot's discretion. So, I mean, we have Katie, who finished first in the world last year, and she still doesn't know if she's on the team, which is pretty crazy to me.
Yeah.
And myself, I finished fourth, and yeah, we both don't know what's going to happen. So there's quite a bit of pressure at the beginning of this season, but we have each other's support. And I hope that we can, you know, keep doing what we've been doing the last few years and continue our upward progression and consistency and in the world ranking.
Yeah, no, exactly right. I think that's amazing. And like, I can imagine for training for an event like this, like the Olympics per se, that you probably need to tap into techniques like visualizing the race day and just visualization in general, right? Is that something you've been implementing in your training, or how do you get around the psychological aspect of racing? Because just what you talked about there, that sounds really stressful to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, especially when I was newer to the sport, I would get so nervous on the start line. But I've had my coach talk to me, and I've talked a bit to a sports psych. And one thing that they remind me is that if you look around, everyone next to you is just as nervous as you are. And it's not going to change anything to work yourself up. And yeah, the nerves mean that you care about something, but don't let it get to you too much. Just let it, you know, fuel your fire and tell yourself you could do it, because at the end of the day, sometimes I think a lot of people's nerves is what holds them back.
No, 100%. Even like, I always think that too with age groupers as well. Same boat, right? I mean, less on the line for age groupers by all means, but I think they all still come in with that mentality of, you know, there's a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety come race day or even the race weekend leading up to it. So, I mean, it seems like when we watch all the pro races, it seems like the pro triathletes on the outside anyway, they seem calm, cool, and collected, right? So it's neat to see. And I just love hearing those kind of tricks you guys use to get in that right mindset on race day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you need to remind yourself of these things, not to get too much in your head. And what I've noticed is the races that I have the most fun with, I perform the best in. So, you know, get out of your head a little bit and just remember you're doing this because you love it and you want to enjoy it.
Perfect. No, that's good advice. And so let's talk about your crew that you train with now. And do you have other people on your crew that are also aiming for the Olympics, or how does that all kind of work with your training?
Yeah, I train under Paulo Sousa now. I've been with him for the last 3 years. I think this is going to be our fourth year. Before him, I was in the collegiate development program with USA Triathlon for a year, and I moved to his group after that. And since I've been with him, I have really improved a lot as an athlete. I think, what was it, two years ago, I finished 12th in the world ranking. Last year, I was 8th, and this year, I was 4th. So I think he's doing something right. But what's pretty cool about the group since I've been a part of it is that it's made up of a group of, I think it's the biggest group of international women that race on the ITU circuit, whether it's at World Cups or WTSs. We have people from all different countries. It's kind of like a United Nations almost. yeah, we have an Estonian, a Japanese girl, Spanish girl, some Belgians, a few Americans, and now an Australian and a South African. So it's a pretty big group, and it's even grown a lot just in this last year, since we started a few weeks ago. So it's pretty cool to see, and I think it's unlike any other female group in the triathlon world. So it's cool to be a part of, because each person brings something special to the table. We all have a strength and we all have a weakness, and we can all push each other in different ways in different sessions. And we know when we need to hold back, and we know when we want to help each other. And so it's a really good group for me. And like I've said, it's gotten me to improve a lot over the last few years. So
yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's amazing, right? And talking about you and Vincent in particular, I guess, right? You guys, of course, have been dating for quite a while now anyway. And I can imagine triathlon, of course, is a huge part of your lives, because both you guys compete at such high levels. And like, how do you guys find that work-life balance? Do you guys find it's easy to, you know, step away from triathlon and not be immersed in it? Or do you find that helps you guys both keep on track with motivating each other? Like, how's it work for that?
Yeah, I think, being with Vince is obviously amazing. He's like a huge inspiration to me as an athlete, like not just because he's my boyfriend, but he's obviously done a lot in this sport and come a long way and has learned a lot along the way, whether it's through his ups or his downs. So it's been a great learning experience to, you know, listen to him and hear what he has to say, whether it's about my race or my training or things that I can do to improve. So that's been cool. I think us being in different groups makes it kind of hard. Last year, we were fortunate to overlap training camp locations a lot. So that's probably why you thought I was in his group. Because I'd say for more than half of the year, we were almost in or near the same place, which was really nice because we are always traveling and always living out of a suitcase. So that was very rare. But this year it's a little different. We're not quite as close to each other right now, but we will see each other at races, which is good. But yeah, it's not easy being on the road and, you know, being under a lot of stress all the time and, you know, training to complete exhaustion. But it's been a learning process for both of us, but we found a way to make it work, and we continue to learn from each other and what we need to do to either improve in our relationship or improve as athletes. And we're constantly, you know, striving to be better at whatever it is we're doing. And I think that has really helped us become better athletes, become better people, and be more consistent this last year.
Exactly. No, you guys have done a really awesome job at being that dynamic duo and both progressing so well in your triathlon careers. And then And one thing that always mind boggles me, so I'm just thinking that you guys do a lot of traveling and you bring your bikes everywhere. Like, so I have to travel this summer to a race with my bike, and I'm still struggling with the logistics behind bringing my bike everywhere with me. So I don't know how you guys seem to do it so flawlessly, because it's definitely has to be pretty technical at times.
Yeah, it's not always easy. It depends on the airline you get. It depends on, you know, can our stuff fit in this rental car? We have three bags each. We have to, you know, pack and unpack it every 2 weeks sometimes and lug it upstairs. We have to see if, like, oh, does this Airbnb have an elevator? Because we don't want to take it up 5 flights of stairs and just little things like that. You really learn by experiencing all these different scenarios of what can go wrong. But I think we've pretty much seen it all in the last year and throughout our career even. So it's definitely not easy, but you get the hang of it. You know what to expect and which airlines to fly with and how big your rental car needs to be, et cetera. Yeah, but it's so not easy.
It's so funny you mentioned about the rental car, and I'm so glad you did, because I feel like I'm going crazy here asking everyone about these rental cars, because that's it. I'm like, how do you fit this bike case inside these rental cars with all your luggage? It just mind boggles me, and I seem like everyone I talk to.
Especially if you have two people with the same amount of luggage, it's pretty funny sometimes. Sometimes I'll just be like, I'll have my seat all the way forward and I'll be pressed up against the dashboard as either my boyfriend or my teammate is driving our car to the airport. So we make it work.
Awesome. I mean, so let's switch it up a little bit here, and then let's talk about the Super League. And I know last year you wrapped up the season 3rd overall, which is, it's always a blast to watch the grit on those race weekends in the Super League. So like, how'd you feel with that race season overall?
Last year's Super League, I don't think was quite as good as the year prior for me, because I think, like I had mentioned earlier, after the Tokyo test event, I didn't have, you know, the race I was expecting, and I kind of mentally checked out for this season, even though we had the grand final and some Super League races. So I was, you know, still training and going through the motions, but more just there to support Vince. And, you know, he was on track to, well, at that point, get the world championship in Lausanne, and then thereafter, you know, continue his domination in Super League. So I was really excited and happy to race those races, because they're always so much fun. But I think I was like pretty mentally drained come the end of the season, and which was like pretty hard for me, but those races are always fun. So it's nice to just, you know, see your competitors in a more relaxed setting and hang out with them and, you know, race for fun instead of, you know, the seriousness of ITU racing.
Exactly. Yeah, that's super cool. And that's one thing I've heard consistently is the how amazing it is just to be around the atmosphere. And it's a lot of the same athletes you race in ITU. It's just a different format. And I think that's pretty cool. And for listeners who may not know the Super League and understand it fully, could you kind of just briefly walk them through and explain a bit on how the formats differ from the ITU and the just the traditional concept of triathlon?
Yeah, so ITU racing is either an Olympic distance or a sprint distance, which is either about a 2-hour race or a 1-hour race, whereas Super League is broken up into these smaller mini triathlons. So the most recent races were in a format of mini triathlons. So swim, bike, run, swim, bike, run, swim, bike, run, back to back to back, each in a much shorter distance. And right after the first run, you have to take off your shoes and jump back in and do a swim and repeat that a few more times. So it's a totally different feeling. And when you're jumping in the water after you, you know, push yourself on the bike in the run and to do that over and over again, it's fun and it's different and it's really exciting to watch. I highly recommend watching it.
Absolutely. No, it's very exciting to watch, and it's definitely, you never know what's going to happen next. And that's what I love about it. Right. And
yeah, there's always so many variables. Sometimes I'm trying to remember what I need to do next. If it's put my cap on or take my shoes off or get my bike in the right gear. It takes a lot of thought for us athletes, but it keeps it entertaining for the people watching.
Yeah, that's it. And on top of that, there's so many different formats, right? And that's what I wanted to ask you about that in particular, like through all those race formats, I can imagine it's really hard to be focused on what's next, but also like, do you have a favorite, like, do you prefer the enduro or the triple mix, or is there a favorite you have out of all those race formats, and do you have a least favorite?
I kind of like them all. The last race we had a time trial on the bike, which was kind of fun and something I had never done before. But I don't think it separated the race as much as I would have liked to see, just to give some people who are stronger bikers that don't usually, you know, get to shine, you know, their moment a few seconds ahead of the rest of the field. So it'll be interesting to see. I think they're constantly adapting these formats to be TV friendly, because in the past it hasn't been quite as easy for spectators to follow, because sometimes we're swimming, biking, and running. Sometimes we're running, biking, and swimming. So it's kind of crazy, but it's so much fun to do. So I think they're finding the best way to tailor these races so that it still has this element of anyone can like win this race, and it's always changing, mm-hmm. but also so that it's easy to follow. And whatever they throw at us, I love, because it's always so different and so unexpected. And I just do my best to remember what I have to do next, because when you're going full gas, it's pretty hard to remember that you need to put your cap and goggles on while you're running. So
honestly, I can't imagine it, because I, even just in the 70.3 course, I know by the time I have to get into transition, I'm like, okay, now what? Right. And that's, I've got hours to work with, and that's
just yeah, that's kind of funny.
So I mean, talking about all the courses out there, like the events out there for the Super League, do you have a favorite in terms of like the course layout and also like the crowd or the atmosphere of the race, or just like you and Vince like to travel a lot after? Is there like a special place you guys like out of the Super League in particular?
Yeah, I think as for the best crowd is definitely Jersey. I think we both agree on this, and we love the community behind the race there. They're so, even though they're like a small island, they are so involved in the sport, and there's such a big triathlon community there. It's really impressive, and they love it so much, and they like live for Super League weekend. It's really cool that we get to be involved with, you know, this community that loves what we're doing so much, and we can give back to them, which is, you know, equally as valuable. As for my personal favorite course, I don't think Vince would agree, because he prefers the flatter courses, but I really loved the Mallorca course. I was sad we didn't race it this last year, but I liked it because it had these like steep punchy hills and then this really steep, fast descent into a technical turn with another hill. And it was crazy and chaotic, but I thought it was a lot of fun. And I think probably winning that race also is part of the reason why I love it so much. But yeah, I really enjoyed that race, and I hope they bring it back one day.
Exactly right. So it's funny to hear you say that you love those like those punchy hilly courses. I used to think I was one who loved a hilly course, I guess, and then maybe I just didn't actually realize I've raced any hilly courses, because the one time I did, I nearly died. So after that, I think the flat and fast courses are what I enjoy.
Yeah, but I think like you mentioned before, I do so many hill reps in training that I think it's just nice to have a race that's full of hills.
That's a good way of looking at it too. Yeah, awesome. I like that. So I know if there's a course involving hills, then do some hill reps. Yeah,
definitely. It helps.
Perfect. No, that's good. So for you, like racing the same athletes across both the ITU and then seeing them again in the Super League, do you find it's completely different, where you might have a select few you typically race neck and neck with in the ITU, but then in the Super League, it's not so predictable with the new formats? Or how does the racing differ in your opinion?
I think athletes that are consistent in all three disciplines and, you know, throughout the year in ITU racing are usually equally as consistent in Super League racing. But those athletes that have a very visible weakness, it's just totally capitalized in Super League racing, because everything is a lot shorter. but it's a lot faster too. So if you make these little mistakes over and over again, you see it at a much bigger scale in the Super League races. Most of the same people are mixing it up at the podium stage of the field, but sometimes, you know, you never know what you're going to get. And each course is very different. But like you saw last year, Katie and Vince dominated the ITU series, and they both dominated Super League.
Yeah, no, it's true. So I guess the consistency carries over quite a bit with just a little bit more mixed up in the Super League. So awesome. And that's what I love to see. It's always nice to see different highlights of racing across the ITU Super League and that sort of thing. Keeps it interesting. So I love it. So, I mean, keeping this rather basic now, because I know this could be a very loaded and detailed question. If we had the time, I'm sure we get into it. But like, could you paint a picture of what your training looks like? And I guess say like a given week in terms of like intensities, because I've heard a lot about the 80-20 type of approach, you know, having the easy workouts super easy and the hard efforts hard. Is that sort of what your type of workouts look like? Or explain us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, so the way our coach blocks our training is more or less in like within like a month span. So usually it evolves throughout the year based on which phase of training we're in. But in general, like 2 days a week are pretty easy. And in the past, I didn't take those days easy, but I don't think I got as much out of the hard days that followed. So I've learned as I've, you know, grown as an athlete to take those days pretty relaxed. And for me, that was a day like today and a day. So it's usually Mondays and Thursdays, and the rest of the week has a bit of intensity, whether it's hill reps on the bike tomorrow and then the next day hill reps on the run and, you know, a hard swim somewhere in between there. So I think just based on my personal experience, yeah, there's some sort of 80-20 ratio going on. But the way I see it is I listen to my body. I go keep it as comfortable as I can on those easy days and just try to get through them because I'm usually pretty tired from the days prior. And I know that going easy and not, you know, pushing myself when I don't feel like I should be pushed means that I'll save it and get more out of the hard days to follow.
Yeah, that's good, right? And like, honestly, I can never wrap my head around seeing ITU athletes at your caliber just doing easy sessions when you guys race such fast paced races. But I mean, it makes total sense. Like, I guess you can't train like you race every day, right? Or I guess you'll be inevitably burnt out at that point. So
yeah. I've definitely, you know, overdone those easy days and been cooked for quite a few days. And I've seen some of the younger athletes in my group do the same thing. They get a bit eager in January and, you know, maybe we just push ourselves a bit too hard too early in the season and we can't finish it off, you know, when it counts the most and be as consistent throughout the year. So that's just something I try to focus on. And I know that this is a long season and that there's a lot of time to keep progressing and we don't need to, you know, rush ourselves and, you know, be as fit as we can be at the end of January. Yeah, this season goes until September at least. So yeah, it's just a matter of being consistent and staying healthy and pushing yourselves on the days and sessions that you need to push yourself in and taking a step back on this sessions that are meant to be easier in recovery sessions.
Perfect. So do you ever use Zwift or do you do any indoor cycling? Or are you guys always sticking to the warmer climates and cycling outdoors during the winter months?
The way our camps are planned usually is that we're kind of chasing this eternal summer or the best weather we can possibly find with the best training location and facilities. So I don't use Zwift. I actually had a bike fit recently where I got to ride on it and it was kind of fun. I see the allure of it and I think if I lived in a cold climate, I would be all over that because it kind of seems like a game and you get to ride with people, even though it's really cold outside. And I think it's a great motivator. But yeah, I don't even travel with a trainer. So no matter what the weather is, I'm going outside for my ride.
Nice. That's good. No, it's so cool that you guys chase the summer all year round. I love that idea. And you know what? Yeah, it's true. Zwift is the saving grace of all Canadians, I think, in the winter months, because it's the only thing to get us through the winter season here.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Oh, that's funny. So as always here, I like to finish strong by wrapping up with some training tips for age groupers out there. And so I guess specifically for those athletes who want to try a Super League race, what's some advice on how they should focus their training? Would you recommend just the higher intensity, shorter distance workouts, or what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think higher intensity workouts are definitely important because it's a shorter race format. But I think you can train pretty similarly to how you would train for like a sprint distance triathlon or even an Olympic. But my biggest weakness personally, and an area that I think a lot of people can improve on, is their transitions. Because when you're swimming, biking, and running three times in a row over a short period of time, those transitions matter so much more than when you're just doing it one time through in a standard distance. So practicing those little things and making sure you know how to mount your bike without rubber banding your shoes, or you know what gear you need to be in, and thinking about how going into each next discipline is going to be affected as you move through the rounds is my biggest, I think that's the biggest area someone can improve in. And like I said, I really struggle with those transitions after the first round. So I think I have some work to do as well.
Awesome. Good stuff. And so when we talk about training specifically, do you guys like to use, you know, metrics like heart rate monitoring or power meters or just perceived exertion? And like, do you guys follow heart rate zones, or what's your thoughts on all those metrics of training?
I don't usually follow a heart rate zone necessarily, but I do like using my Garmin bike computer just to know how much power I'm putting out in bike workouts, especially whether it's an easy day. I generally know what power I should go on an easy workout or an easy ride, and then if I'm doing hill repeats or a pace line session, I know about what power I should be in. The only thing that is a bit different with our format of racing with ITU style, since we're draft legal, you're not really in control of your power at all. You're more at the mercy of what everyone else in your group is doing, unless you're off the front. So that usually doesn't happen. So what is helpful is if you race with your bike computer in an ITU race, and then you can analyze it after and see what the demands of that specific race or the races over the course of a year, entail in terms of power spikes and areas of that you can improve. For instance, maybe you're not as good technically, so you're off the back and you have to put out a lot more power than your competitors, and that cooks your legs, or how being at the front of a pack affects being in the middle and vice versa. So I think these tools are really good and helpful for translating your racing to your training and getting your training right every day.
That's a great way of explaining that, right? And it's good to hear that. So for the most part, you're using day to day based off how you feel, and you know it's either gonna be a hard session or an easy session, and then you're not so focused on keeping your heart rate below a certain point in an easy session or above a certain point in the hard session, right?
No, I don't really look at these things. I mean, maybe after the fact. But I think a lot of it's based on your perceived effort, and we all want to feel great every day, right? But that's not going to be the case when you're training X amount of hours every day and every week, and you have other things going on in your life. If you're an age grouper, like not every day is going to be, you know, the best training session. So I think my biggest advice is just to go based on how you feel. If it's supposed to be a hard workout, make it feel hard. And if it's supposed to be an easy workout, make it feel easy. And you can use these power ranges or heart rates as a guideline, definitely more in the longer course racing, but your perceived effort, I think, is the most important, especially when it comes to the hard stuff.
Perfect. Awesome. That's great advice. I love that. And so this one's a little bit more of a personal question here. I mean, so aside from Vince, which we already talked about, who would be an athlete out there who's inspired you the most over your triathlon career to be your best self as an athlete, or if not an athlete, then a coach or someone?
This is a tough question. I mean, yeah, Vince is, I think, the most inspirational person for me because I know so much about him and his background and where he's been and what it's taken for him to get to where he is now. And it's pretty incredible to not just watch, but to be a part of. And he definitely is my biggest inspiration. A few other athletes that I have looked up to over the course of these past few years since I started watching ITU racing and when I studied abroad in Florence, Italy, is Sarah True, who you interviewed a while back. I think she comes from a similar swimming background and she has similar strengths to mine. So I saw a lot of overlap in myself as I tried to strive to be a better athlete. I thought I could, you know, emulate her eventually one day. And she just seems to be, she's a super cool person and she's a very good spokesperson for the sport. A few other athletes that I have looked up to are Andrea Hewitt. She's from New Zealand. She has been probably the most consistent athlete on the ITU circuit since she started the sport. She's always in the top 10 and she's podiumed so many races and she continues to just dominate the sport despite having, you know, had dealt with some pretty hard situations just before the Rio Olympics with her husband passing away. So,
oh, wow.
Her husband was Laurent Vidal, who is also a triathlete. So I think I really admire not only her consistency as an athlete, but that she was able to, you know, overcome something that must have been very like tragic and hard. And she's just such an inspiration to me. And she's a super sweet person. And lastly, I'd say Katie Zafir. She is the current world champion and I race her all the time. but I look up to a lot of the girls I race. Katie has been just so consistent and so good since she started the sport. It's really impressive. Like I've had a much slower starting point than her, where she has just been dominating since she started. So it's no surprise to me that she is the current world champion. I look up to almost all the girls I race now, because before I started, I was watching them on Triathlon Live, just cheering all of them on. So it's cool to you know, be amongst them now.
Awesome. That's really cool. It's a great list of people you have there who inspire you. And definitely, I'm sure you've inspired a lot of these people as well and everyone else who you race with and all the people listening in and watching. So that's really cool. And you know what, Taylor, I think that's a wrap here. I mean, if we look into 2020, I assume you have most of your season already structured out, right? A lot of it's based around some qualifier events and potentially the Olympics. And do you have your whole schedule filled out yet?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is based on whether or not I qualify for the U.S. Olympic team, because like I said, we have so much depth in our women's program. But the beginning of the year, we're more or less just be filled with the WTS races. And then after that qualification event, we'll determine what the rest of the year looks like, whether I'm going to have more of a focus on the Olympics or whether I'm just going to keep trekking through all of the WTS races. And after that, it's all Super League and a few French Grand Prix races scattered in there. So it's just going to be about three different series of I'm going to race three different series, the WTS series, Super League, and the French Grand Prix. And hopefully I'll include the Olympics in there, but we will see.
Yeah, that's right. Fingers crossed. I mean, we're all hoping for the best for you, and it'd be amazing to see you out there in the Olympics. So we're looking forward to it. And then just for anyone out there who doesn't already follow you on social media or your website, things like that, where's the best place they can find out more about you?
I post a lot on Instagram, sometimes Twitter, and I also have a website. All of those are TK Spivey, which is my first, the letter of my first name, my middle name initial, and my last name. And I also have a website that's tkspivey.com that I try to update myself, but I think it's a little behind the times. But I think, yeah, Instagram is the best way to go. If anyone ever wants to message me, they can. I try to get back to them when I'm not super exhausted from training. Yeah, and I post a lot of stuff there. And you can see some funny things about me and my training and my teammates and what our lives are like on the road living out of a suitcase.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's really cool. I definitely recommend following the Instagram. I honestly, I feel like all triathletes now, that's the best place to find any triathlete on Instagram. That's always the go-to. Sometimes Twitter, Facebook, they're hit and miss, but you can always rely on a good Instagram.
Yeah, it's definitely the easiest platform. It's
such
a good way for people to, you know, connect with you and follow you and, you know, give back to them in any way you can if they have any questions. So
perfect. Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. Really appreciate that. And we'll be sure to connect again another time, and wishing you nothing but the best as you prepare for your 2020 season.
Thank you. You too.
Awesome. Take care. Awesome. Well, that is a wrap with the amazing Taylor Spivey. Thanks so much for listening in, everyone. And if you enjoyed this episode, among others, then please just take a minute to open up the Apple Podcast app on your iPhone, search Pacing Racing, and click subscribe, and then scroll down to the very bottom just to leave us a quick written review. It takes less than a minute to do, but it goes a long, long way in helping me out. So to all who do that, thank you so, so much. It's hugely appreciated. And other than that, happy training. And if you want to train with me on Zwift, then feel free to drop me a follow by searching Steven Langenhausen. Other than that, take care, chat soon, and cheers.